Coming to you from the beach at Manzanita, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs, nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when drug users are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. Sarah Merrigan is a drug policy reform activist in Omaha, Nebraska. I'm from Iowa, and I won't hold her being from Nebraska against her. She's worked with Students for Sensible Drug Policy, been working in the state of Nebraska, working federally, working internationally. Is a brilliant activist, and it is my pleasure to finally have her on the show. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you, Doug. How are you?
I am terrific. It is a beautiful day. And I'm excited to be talking to you because this is, you and I have been chatting a bit on Facebook and Twitter, social media, about some things. And there's one of the concerns I have had over the last few years as the marijuana industry has grown and developed and the activists and reform movement has sort of been pushing along in that is that, drug policy is a nuanced thing. It's a nuanced set of issues. It's not a simple cut and dried kind of thing. That's the whole point of drug policy reform. If everything were so very simple and cut and dried, this would have taken so many years. But in fact, it's really quite nuanced. And we have here in this state, of course, we have medical marijuana. We also have adult use. And what I've seen is a growing number of people, as the opioid crisis and the concerns over misuse of prescription medications have grown, I've seen a growing number of people. It's one thing to simply say, here's an alternative, here's something that might help, here's something that could be an adjunct. And, you know, because marijuana is effective at a lot of things as an anti-anxiety, as a sleep remedy, and also for minor pain. Mm-hmm. But you get people who then decide, okay, you can throw away all those things that you're using because they're manufactured by evil pharma, and you must just get rid of all these things and just use this instead. And it's like, okay, you don't know my pain. You aren't me. Why are you now deciding to prescribe what I need to do? Isn't that where the problem started in the first place? And it's not just when it comes to pain management, because it is things like anxiety and depression and PTSD and a lot of other stuff. So why don't I shut up and let you talk, because you say this a lot more clearly than I do.
Sure. No, I think you're absolutely right. And the phrase that kind of came to mind, I can't take credit for, and I wish I could remember who I first heard it from. But they have talked about sort of specifically in the case of like mental health drugs and the push for research into psychedelics. They've sort of coined it psychedelic evangelicalism, and sort of this disparaging of big pharma and the any pharmaceuticals, whether it's a benzodiazepine, an opioid, stimulants like Ritalin or Adderall, all sorts of things like that. And there's this, I've even personally encountered, a number of times, I'm fairly open about my mental health issues. And I do take an SNRI for depression, and more than once have experienced chatting with someone within the drug policy reform community about that, and have they've responded with, well, have you tried ketamine, or what do you think about MDMA therapy and all of these things that, well, I do, you know, I don't ever want to come off as sounding like I don't believe in the power of psychedelic assisted therapy. I think it's incredibly promising, and the research that's being done is fantastic. But like you said in my intro, I'm in Omaha, Nebraska. So my options are, you know, slightly more limited. But even right now, MDMA, unless you're in one of the trials, MDMA assisted therapy really isn't a regulated option for anybody. And I personally, I've kind of taken to saying this to get my point across. You know, I believe that the future of psychedelic therapy is incredibly promising, and I want to live long enough to see it become a regulated and tangible option for everyone. And for me, that means that I'm taking pharmaceutical drugs that deal with my depression and my PTSD and my anxiety. And it can be very frustrating to this movement in this community of people where I felt and continue to feel like I found my place in this community and sort of solidarity. And I feel like majority of the time we're on the same page, and people really tend to agree that drugs are not inherently good or bad, and it depends very much on the context in which they're used and all sorts of other factors. But it seems that all kind of goes out the window when we start talking about pharmaceuticals. And I really like what you said about you don't know my pain. And I think that that's very, it's just as true for mental pain and mental trauma also. And yeah, I guess that's my spiel. You know, there's just a very interesting kind of disconnect, and sometimes it feels like a binary. Like people feel like you have to choose between pharmaceuticals or being a supporter of psychedelic therapy, and I just very strongly feel that that should not be the case, and people should have every tool in the toolbox available to them, because everyone is so different, and we don't know what's going to work.
Well, and as you said, you're there in Omaha. I mean, okay, maybe if you could afford the time and the travel and whatever else to be able to, you know, become part of one of these trials, you'd have to qualify, you'd have to be chosen. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, I mean, okay, so you're, what if you're not one of those? It's a very limited number of people. What if you're not one of those folks? What are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to either A, just break the law and run the risk of getting hold of the wrong drug? I mean, sure, the guy told you that it's MDMA, mm-hmm. or they told you it was LSD, but the guy who told you it was LSD was actually giving you 25 N-bomb. Now, which we talked about, which I talked to a friend about not long ago, and for folks who are unaware, 25-INBOM is a psychedelic. It's extremely powerful. It's much more powerful than LSD, but some people are getting the stuff instead of LSD. Much longer lasting trip. Oh, and it has a toxic dose that you can reach quite easily. If you think, oh, I take lots of acid, I'll drop a lot. Yeah, you could die. You can get certainly very ill. And it's scary, but I mean, what if you live in one of these places where you don't have that access, you know, where you, what are you supposed to do? Just suffer? I mean, this is not a choice. That's not a legitimate choice. And no. the whole, well, just go ahead and do this. It's like, yeah, well, that's not really an option. So what else do you have? You know, No, it's frustrating. It's horribly frustrating. I have several friends who live in states where medical marijuana is not an option. And so what are they supposed to do? Well, they can just keep on breaking the law like they were. Yeah, no worries. I mean, sure, you might get arrested and thrown in jail. But hey, that's part of the business, right? No, it's not. It's really, really not. It's not a legitimate thing. It's just...
Yeah, it's frustrating. And it's... it almost feels like walking a tightrope at times too, because there are very legitimate critiques of the pharmaceutical industry. You know, that's, it's not, the fact that I take pharmaceutical medicines doesn't mean that I, you know, am a wholehearted supporter of the industry. I think that there are huge problems. And it's just, I don't know. It's a real struggle to try and walk that fine line, about finding what the appropriate treatment is for you. You know, I mentioned the experiences I've had with people within drug policy, but I've had terrible experiences with people, with pharmacists and doctors also. I've been taking prescription stimulants for about 7 years, and had a pretty chaotic relationship with them, when I was about 19, and, dealt with disordered eating and weight loss and things like that. And I brought it up to my doctor, the prescribing doctor, as a concern. And her exact words to me were, well, you might just have to force yourself to eat. There was no, you know, I'd had friends who attend a lot of festivals suggest Pedialyte and things like that. And my own doctor just told me that I was probably just going to have to force myself. And that was really upsetting. And when I went back to her then a couple months later to get another prescription that I'd been recommended in therapy, she wouldn't prescribe it without sending me to a nurse practitioner of her own preference, and decided that that was the appropriate time to bring up my weight as an issue for the first time in all of the years of me seeing her. And so there are very real issues with the way that these drugs are being prescribed and the options that people have. But I feel like most of the critiques I see people make of the pharmaceutical industry are not the most legitimate ones, or the things that deserve critique the most.
Indeed. Now, and you mentioned doctors before we were talking, this one of my concerns, the doctors, in a way, by pushing the blame onto Big Pharma, we're letting doctors skate and we're giving them a pass. And it's things like prescribing the anti-anxiety medication along with the pain the opioid, and not advising the patient very clearly that the interaction between those drugs can be quite dangerous. That, you know, I mean, a lot of these overdoses we're hearing about and the overdose deaths we're hearing about, there are other drugs on board when they overdose and die. And this is prescription opioids and prescription anti-anxiety and prescription pain medications. Oh, and let's wash it down with a beer. That's how you overdose and die. It's not just from this one thing. And yet we're going to demonize the opiates, we'll demonize the pharmaceutical companies, but, you know, the doctors who prescribed all these things to this one patient and never told them how to do this safely, oh, we'll let them have a pass, right? And yet we're supposed to trust these doctors with this other stuff. I mean, is it any wonder people start to mistrust medicine? I mean, what is
No, I think there was actually a really interesting article in Quartz, I believe, within the last couple of weeks, that talked specifically about women's relationship with modern medicine, and how a lot of women have been driven to sort of the alternative medicine scene or community, whatever you want to call it, because we tend to be taken less seriously by doctors and other medical professionals. And, you know, a lot of the the tests that are like the drug trials and things, if they're being done on animals, they're being done on male animals the majority of the time, and women are just tend to be at a disadvantage. And so I really don't think it's any surprise that people are starting to turn away and sort of, I think it's almost, as I'm saying it out loud, I'm seeing this sort of parallel between the drug education that we give to kids and, you know, and then they find out that it's not true and, or it doesn't, you know, it doesn't quite work that way. And so then they start experimenting with other drugs. And I feel like people are sort of starting to have issues with their doctor and they, you know, if something happens and then they have a negative encounter with their doctor, like in my case, saying you're going to have to force yourself to eat or something, you know, else that causes them to mistrust their doctor. It's not surprising that they're going to start to question that and maybe look in other places for answers.
You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. My guest on this edition of Free Culture Radio is Sarah Merrigan, a harm reduction and drug policy reform activist in Omaha, Nebraska. We're talking about mental health care and attitudes toward treatment during a time of drug policy reform. We'll get back to that interview in a moment. First, here are some facts about mental health in the U.S. According to the American Psychological Association, about 45 million American adults had some type of mental illness in the past year. About 11 million American adults have a serious mental illness. Nearly one-fourth of all adult stays in U.S. community hospitals involve depressive, bipolar, schizophrenia, and other mental health disorders or substance use-related disorders. About 40 million American adults have an anxiety disorder. About 14.8 million American adults have a major depressive disorder in a given year. Major depressive disorder is the leading cause of disability in the U.S. for people aged 15 to 44. Let's get back to that interview. I was just not long ago was doing a Bay Area for Patients at a Time. Brandon Wyatt from the Minority Cannabis Business Association and also with the Weed for Warriors Project I managed to get to, well, actually I had him interviewing someone else. Never mind. The point is, he was talking about this very thing and the problem that a lot of vets have is that, you know, they're not really trusting the people who are telling their docs. They're not really trusting the medicines that they're being told they should take. And when you consider how they were treated in the military and how they're treated at the VA, you can understand why they're not trusting, you know, some of these things. It's just, and doctors mm-hmm. and women, oh my God, I have, my understanding from talking to several friends is that it gets worse as you get older. That as bad as it is, as hard as it is to get a doc to take you seriously now, by the time you reach 40, you know, well, pain, you just expect pain, don't you? Ah, that doc is...
Yeah, I mean, there's such... it's worth noting, too, I think, you know, you and I are both white, and people of color, there are numerous studies have shown that Black people are far less likely to have their pain taken seriously by doctors. And it's just, there's a huge problem with, I think, the education that medical students are getting around prescription drugs, around other drugs, and maybe just as a whole.
You were at the Harm Reduction Conference recently. Could you tell me, how did that go? I've seen stuff on social media, didn't have a chance to catch any of it.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I arrived late and missed sort of the opening plenary when the kind of silent protests took place and people, Canadian activists, primarily a lot of frontline outreach workers, stood up and turned their backs while the health minister, Jane Philpott, spoke. And the signs said a lot of things, but the main message was, they talk, we die. And really just pointing out that even though a lot of progress has been made. There's still so much more that could be done, and people in Canada are still dying at just a heartbreaking rate. It's terrible. And it was actually the last day of the harm reduction conference that I believe the I'm blanking on the name, C-42, I think was maybe the name of the bill, whatever the legislation was that was banning or holding up new supervised injection facilities in Canada. They were able to change that law, and it actually happened the last day of the harm reduction conference, so that was exciting. And since then, three new sites have opened in Montreal, and I believe, I want to say I just saw that three more have been approved and two have been approved in Surrey. And so they're moving pretty quickly. But the protest did draw a lot of mixed reactions from attendees at the conference. It was something, you know, I don't know if we mentioned it, but I also co-host a podcast called This Week in Drugs, and we're able to feature some of the conference attendees and even one of the organizers of the protest on our podcast. And they talked a lot about what it meant to them and why they got involved and sort of the different roles that everyone has to play within drug policy. You know, the one of the biggest critiques was that Jane Philpott and as the Canadian health minister is one of the most progressive politicians we have as far as drug policy goes on a global level. And people were saying, you know, we shouldn't be criticizing her. We should be applauding her and thanking her. And that's absolutely true. And that's absolutely a role that some people should be playing. And if, you know, especially if they're the ones who are working closely with her on legislation, then yes, that's what you should be doing. But I think I was also reminded of something that came up during the Democratic primary for president. And so 2015, I think, when Black Lives Matter activists were sort of pressuring Bernie Sanders, and people were getting upset about it and say, you know, he's the best candidate we have. Why don't you just get in line behind him and be quiet and say thank you? And it's someone made a statement that really you push the hardest on the margins because that's where change is the most possible. You know, if someone is already on your side and they're a supporter, then you keep pushing them and you want to keep pushing them until they, you know, fully embrace the values of, you know, in this case, harm reduction or whatever it may be. And so I think that I don't think that any social movement can really exist. And I hope that this is what most people walked away from that conference with, really, was understanding that people on both sides of the spectrum are necessary. You know, we need people who are going to constantly be pushing our elected officials to do more and to be better. And especially when they're people who are working on the front lines of a crisis like this and seeing people die on a daily basis at this point. You know, they have their feelings and their actions are completely valid in standing up and feeling like there's not enough being done. But again, it's a spectrum. And so there are also people who are in a more policy-oriented position who go and meet with the legislature, and there has to be this compromise, and everyone needs to be able to share knowledge and kind of work together at the end of the day.
Any closing thoughts for our listeners?
You know, I think we hit most of it. I guess closing thoughts for listeners, going back to what you had said sort of in the openings, the you don't know my pain. And I think just kind of keeping that in mind anytime you're interacting with someone, is that, you know, whether if you feel inclined to make a judgment on a coping mechanism or a medication or something like that, just, you know, remind yourself that you don't know their pain, and try and empathize a little bit.
So again, speaking with Sarah Merrigan, formerly the Student Sensible Drug Policy, out in the real world now, with the rest of us.
Lucky
and,
me.
And doing work as a drug policy reformer and activist, and because it's a, you know, it, people think they have to have an organization or they have to become a part of a thing in order to do something, you know, that they have to have some kind of, and I was like that. I was. And I, you don't really, you just got to do the thing, you know, do it because it's what's right, because you, it's what you want to do and you believe in. I mean, that's the best reason for doing something.
Absolutely. Know?
And I'm glad, and I'm glad you're doing it. This is, I mean, I want to go back to the Midwest one day. I do. I like it back there. It's where my, that's where all the people I grew up with are. And I, you know, that's when I get old, I'm guessing that's the kind of people I probably want to be around.
It has its charms.
It does. It does. And thank God for people like you still being back there and making it a better place.
Doing what I can. There's absolutely a good community of folks here that don't fit those stereotypes that get passed around so often.
Well, maybe if we work at it, we can change those stereotypes around.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Iowans, Nebraskans, they're all of them. They're just like you and me. That's everybody back there with us. It's great. I mean, geez.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Oh, it is. It is. Just keep saying it. Just keep saying it. It's true.
All right.
Shows, announcements about upcoming programs and events, and other stuff like news items that may be of interest. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. And this week, from the beach at Manzanita. I want to thank my guest, Sarah Merrigan. Many thanks to our engineer. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support, as you make it all worth it. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.